You know, over the weekend, I was just telling our panelist, Brian Robinson, the Republican strategist and former communications director for Governor Nathan Deal. I was just telling you, Brian, before we went on the air that, you know, sometimes like over the weekend, I'm thinking like on Saturday about, oh, what are we going to talk about on Monday? Maybe the Trump-Comey thing has died down and we don't have that to talk about. Where are we heading? And then on Sunday, the shows all happen. and Nan Orrick, State Senator Nan Orrick, Democratic Senator, I don't even know where we have so many things to talk about now. I don't even know where to start.
Well,
it's a
somebody's
cornucopia.
Going to Rome.
We will talk about Calista Gingrich, who apparently is on her way to the Vatican as U.S. ambassador. We'll get to that at some point. But you know what I'd love to do, and we'll all get involved in this conversation. There's a big event, Brian, going on up in the 6th Congressional District this afternoon. Karen Handel has Speaker Paul Ryan in there for, I think it's a 4 o'clock rally now on her behalf, a Get Out the Vote rally. And Greg Bluestein is up there covering it for the AJC. Greg, are you with us?
I am. I'm standing here live in the hotel conference room waiting for Paul Ryan with a bunch of other reporters.
So this is billed as a Get Out the Vote rally, I think. What do they hope to accomplish with this rally this afternoon?
Well, a couple key things. They hope first to help to further consolidate Republican support behind Karen Handel, especially after all the infighting in the first round of the Republican vote. She's already had Donald Trump host a fundraiser for her. Now she has Paul Ryan, and she could have some other big-name Republicans still to come. And secondly, they hope to raise a ton of money. You know, John Ossoff has already laid out $6.6 million between April 18th and the June 20th runoff. So that means he's probably raised about $6.6 million or more. And Karen Handel is sort of playing from behind here. Her campaign says it's already raised about $2 million, but they need to raise as much money as they can to combat him on the airwaves.
So do we have some, we have different levels. We have a meet and greet photograph with Paul Ryan, private session for one amount. Do you know what the giving levels are by any chance?
I can't remember offhand.
That's okay.
But I know it's $1,000 plus for some of the exclusive access.
Okay. How big a venue? Is it true that they changed venues, that they were in a venue in Sandy Springs at one point and moved over to the Marriott in Marietta?
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed. The first venue was supposed to be at the Five Seasons Brewery in Sandy Springs, which would have been quite the fun venue at the Prado. they moved it not too far down the road to the Marriott Perimeter Center, right near the MARTA station. So it's a nice venue, but it's not quite as colorful as a brewery would be.
So, Brian, the reason I asked him that is I guess they're expecting a big crowd, but I always thought a fundamental rule in booking a room in politics is make sure you book a room smaller than you think you might need so you can really pack it. The question is, if they're in a bigger room, they better turn out the bodies.
That's right, and we'll see what kind of a draw Speaker Paul Ryan is. He is definitely a different type of draw than President Trump. It's a different segment of the party that really wants to get his ear and talk to him. And you know, I'm in that segment of the party, frankly. I'm super excited to see Karen Handel have an event with Paul Ryan because he represents the mainline, mainstream Republican conservative values that I think better reflect the district than President Trump.
Boy, Nan, can you tell that he used to be a communications director, Brian Robinson?
Somewhere in there.
Good
yeah,
talking
I saw Paul Ryan caricatured on Saturday Night Live serving up 2 scoops of ice cream to President Trump. And I might leave it there.
Hey, Greg, what size are you seeing a lot of people show up already? Is there a line waiting for the ballroom to open?
Yeah, we're still about 2 hours before the event. There's a handful of folks who are here, but maybe about a dozen or two. And there's also supposed to be a protest, but that hasn't materialized yet. But remember, I mean, the doors aren't even open to the public till 3, so it's not a standing room only crowd quite yet. But I think they'll have a pretty packed room.
All right.
What are they protesting, Greg? This is ridiculous. Get a job.
What?
Get a
what?
Job. If you can go protest at 4 in the afternoon, you need to find a better way. If you need to go protest Paul Ryan, particularly at 4 in the afternoon,
particularly Paul Ryan,
a more profitable way.
I would be there if I weren't here.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
An Ayn Rand guy who wants to decimate Medicaid, Medicare. I mean, he's been very clear about his agenda and what it would do. We'd have people on the Medicaid wait list if Paul Ryan were able to have his way.
Yeah, if Paul Ryan had his way, we may have a balanced budget and a sustainable economic future for my daughter to inherit.
Okay, let me, because Greg, I know you have to go in a minute, so let me call a truce just for a moment between Brian and Nan. Greg, what's your take? You know, it's interesting to hear what Brian just said, because I wonder if there's a downside to having Paul Ryan in there on your behalf. I mean, he has incredibly low approval ratings. Even many Republicans are not happy with his performance for one reason or another. But obviously the Handel campaign sees no real downside to having him there at all, do they?
Yeah, I think there's two things. I mean, one, it reflects that Karen Handel's really not, she's taking all the help she can possibly
get. Right.
We saw Donald Trump earlier. We're seeing Paul Ryan. I think we might see Vice President Pence come. We might see Marco Rubio come. We might see other high-profile surrogates come. And her attitude is basically, if you want to help me, please do, because they are helping her raise big amounts of cash. I mean, Donald Trump helped her raise three quarters of $1 million. And, Ryan today could get well into the six figures for her campaign as well. Secondly, though, I think it also ties her to the health care bill unlike no other. I mean, she's already said very positive things. She's already embraced the health care bill, but he is the chief architect of it. And you know, Democrats are hoping to turn 2018 into somewhat of a referendum against the House health care bill. Of course, by then, it will probably be a very different iteration. But still, this is her, you know, she's going to be up there probably speaking about the House health care bill alongside the chief proponent of it.
Well, we're going to talk about that. I know we got to let you go, but one last thing before you do go. What's the latest from the Handel campaign on debates? We know that John Ossoff has said he'd debate basically anytime, anywhere. Is it correct to say that Karen Handel's people have now accepted one debate?
They have not said yet whether or not they will.
Okay.
They have, not to my knowledge, any debate. They've said they will debate him and they're ready to meet him, you know, and to expose who he is and you know, some campaign rhetoric there. But they haven't exactly said what it will be, any specific debate.
All right.
We know of three or four out there.
Yeah.
Including Atlanta Press Club.
All right. Well, I ask you that because you're watching that race day in and day out. We're going to talk about it once we've allowed you to get back to your reporting job. Obviously, we are going to read what you file both on the Political Insider blog at AJC.com and in tomorrow morning's Dead Tree edition of the AJC.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Bye.
So let's talk about that, Nan and Brian. First of all, a couple of things that we can unpack. First of all, we saw a poll from Gravis Marketing come out this week. Brian, I don't know Gravis Marketing, but they pretend. They suggest that they are nonpartisan marketing firm. And they call this race pretty much a dead heat. As did Mark Roundtree's poll at Landmark Communications for WSB last week. But the crosstabs, the questions that drill down a little are really fascinating. Let me start with you, Nan. Karen Handel has slightly better approval ratings than John Ossoff does. He's underwater by a few points. She, in fact, is more positive than negative, which makes me wonder if it means that her attack ads against him or the PAC attack ads against him are working a little better than the attack ads against her. How would you describe why that would be happening if that poll is correct?
Exactly. And I have not drilled down on that poll to the extent that you just referenced, Bill. There's an awful lot of animus, actually, across the state against the Secretary of State, former Secretary of State, the Handel, who did such a hatchet job on our voter rolls and got called out for it by the feds. And I ran into a fellow who used to work for her, and he said, well, I'll tell you, 312 people that won't be voting, and this was a statewide race he was talking about, won't be voting for Handel. And I said, 300? He said, yeah, that's how many people work in the Secretary of State's office. Mightily disliked. And that's traveled with her for some time now. So,
okay, but the poll suggests that maybe her approval ratings are a bit better than his. Is that Do you think that's a result of whose ads are more effective, or is it just this poll is based on like 800 plus voters? The margin of error is enough that you got to wonder about any of these figures. But it does tell me that maybe she or her attacks are better than his right now.
I really think at this juncture, all of that is noise, and I really don't think that it's really making a difference. There are a lot of consultants and media buyers out there making a lot of money, and Lord knows Atlanta TV stations are raking it in. The Christmas parties at those stations are going to be well funded this year.
Note to self. Yeah.
Yeah. But that said, all of these polls are within the margin of error. And I think that is the truth, that this is a dead heat. It's going to be 5 to 8% of the electorate that's going to determine who the 6th district's next congressman is. And that poll that you just referenced, that was in the Political Insider, had an 8% undecided. Now,
that's right.
I think that's probably about accurate, and those are the people who are going to determine. Now, I can tell you one thing that's being put out there by the Democrats that is just so unfair and disingenuous, and they need to be called out for it, and let me take this point of privilege and do it. You keep seeing, and I bring this up because my parents, who are not political people, they get Atlanta TV. They were like, well, so what's the deal with that Lexus that Karen was using on taxpayer dollars? That just doesn't look good. Well, I wondered the same thing because I thought it didn't look good. Well, come to find out, the Lexus was her personal private vehicle paid for by her. And she took the daily allowance for a car due to any statewide elected official. She was able to get a state car if she wanted it. She chose not to use her own and to get an allowance. Perfectly fine. It is utterly dishonest.
All right. So, Nan, we have breaking news here. Brian Robinson informing us for the first time that political ads are not necessarily fair, honest, and accurate, which is really important news.
Imagine that.
So,
yes.
Okay, and let's take what he said as being correct. There's probably enough back and forth in terms of the negative ads and the accuracy of them that we could go in either direction.
We could spend the hour
But here's what is interesting. The Gravis poll says that the people of the district they polled do not like the new health care bill, but they have more faith in Handel to work on health care issues than they do in Ossoff. That's a fascinating finding, since she's going to be standing this afternoon with the architect of the House health care bill.
And I think the take-home message is, though, people don't like that bill. I don't know what your numbers were on that. The other thing is that people are out right now knocking on doors and registering voters. And I believe that the independent voters are breaking for Ossoff.
Yeah, the poll said 53% of people who did not turn out on April 18th support Ossoff. Of course, if you didn't turn out on April 18th, Brian,
exactly.
The question becomes how many of those people will turn out on June 20th, and I think that's problematic, but not necessarily worth discounting in terms of those.
Well, this is the Democrats' dilemma here. There's always a majority of people who don't vote who would have voted for them. I mean, that was certainly what we heard after Hillary lost to Trump. Well, all these Democrats just stay at home. Republicans are better voters. That's the truth. We are much more likely to show up. We are numerically outnumbered across the country, but we keep winning because we're more likely to turn out, and we're more likely to turn out in particular in a runoff, which is what we're dealing with here.
Well, it's very interesting. Let's remind our listeners that this is a district where Trump barely bested Hillary by 1% point in a supposedly deep red district. So somebody was turning out, Brian. That doesn't quite, your narrative doesn't quite support the findings. And I think that the Democratic voters are incented with every news cycle. I mean, we're going to run through some of this today, but what do people think about when our highly respected chief intelligence agent is talking about an internal threat to our democracy coming from this administration? When you see the FBI in a midnight firing, all of that is rolling downhill and is in play in that district right now. Well, and that incents people to vote and wakes people up.
It okay.
I don't disagree with a lot of what Nan said, oddly enough. You know, because the fact is, you're right. Independents in this race have been heavily for Ossoff. There was no way he could have gotten to 48% in the first round without that. My take on it, and it's not data-driven, it's just a sense, is that the Republican base is going to be with Karen very strongly. She is going to lock up all Republican votes. She's going to have to break into Ossoff's hold on independents. That's going to be where this race is run. If she can't do that, Ossoff is going to win.
Well, but then, okay, so that's an interesting point of view,
Dan. It is.
Dan.
Sure it is.
Because if that's the case, and Brian, I think he assesses it accurately, are Paul Ryan, Mike Pence, and anybody else from Republican national leadership who comes down here going to be useful in helping break into those independent voters or not? I mean, I guess we don't really know because we don't know where they stand entirely, well, but I'm not sure they're Trump supporters.
I would bet that, but I will say John Ossoff is very much running a race about working for the district. And, of course, the attack ads against him try to paint a different picture, but that's what voters are very interested
in. Are they really?
Oh,
what
yes.
are they interested in other than this is a Trump surrogate versus an anti-Trump surrogate? I'm seriously, we've tried to pinpoint what the issues are on a local level in this race.
I would bet that transportation polls, off the roof. I would bet that education polls off the roof. We've got a person who wants to deconstruct our public education system that Trump has appointed. Now, that's a national issue, and it is a highly local issue.
Okay.
And then with our bridge mishap on 85 North, I just rode over that span yesterday.
Thank goodness you're safe.
And it worked, and it worked. It's wonderful. Got right up to the lake. The transportation is a front burner issue in Georgia, no question.
All right, Brian, you want to weigh in on that? This is a nationalized race, although transportation, Nan may have identified the one big local issue that
and health.
And no one's talking
about
health
care. Health care, but again, that's national.
And no one's talking about transportation, and I agree with Nan. I am a 6th District resident, and I can tell you transportation is something that impacts my life every single day.
Uh-huh.
I am along that northeast corridor that was impacted so heavily by the crack in the bridge, using crack as a double. But here's the thing. In the 6th District race, I know what John Ossoff's message is. And he is speaking to a college-educated electorate. The stuff he's talking about is much more highbrow than what you would normally see in a political ad talking about biotech jobs, which I doubt many people in Georgia could even define, and other technology jobs in a district that is the Silicon Valley of Georgia and Alpharetta. That whole spot, Georgia 400 spine, is tech-heavy jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And he is making the argument, I'm going to be a fiscal conservative. I am a safe way to protest vote against Trump. I won't go up there and be some crazy liberal. You know, you don't have to worry about that. I'm a safe way to express your consternation about our president. And I want to see that sort of clarity of message from Karen. I want her to make an issue, a choice here. Talk about the tax cut bill that will be on the floor this year. That'll be a no vote from Ossoff. That'll be a yes vote from Handel. And this is a rich district.
All right.
Rich people like those tax cuts.
I've got to get to a break. But one final question before the break, and I'll ask you this, Nan. All of the things that Brian just talked about with Ossoff needing to find a way to appeal to independents, he said he's trying to cut into the Republican base in the district, too. We'll see. But those are all the reasons why there's a VIP gap that we're likely to watch in this race as it continues. We are going to see national Republicans like Paul Ryan come in and work for Karen Handel. John Ossoff, I would suggest, he doesn't want Nancy Pelosi or any of those.
I think he should bring her.
I'll tell you, we've heard some very moving comments from Republicans who rely on the Affordable Care Act for their health care, and they're Republican. They're stamped red, and they're saying, my party is making a mistake about taking apart.
My point, though, is
that may be who are the spokespeople that matter and that reach people are in-state Republicans who are deeply concerned.
Fair enough. I got to get to a break. Let me do that right now. When we come back, I want to spend a minute with Nan Orrick and Brian Robinson talking about a special election that's coming up tomorrow. Up in that same area where the congressional runoff is taking place. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB. We're already getting some tweets in. We'll get you all to weigh in. So tweet us so we can get you on the air with your tweets. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
It's time for spring cleaning. Donate your used car to GPB. Just call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate online at gpb.org/cars. That's 877-GPB-1-CAR or gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Democratic State Senator Nan Orrick and Republican strategist Brian Robinson join me very quickly. We have a runoff tomorrow in District 32. That's the state Senate seat that was held by Judson Hill, Brian's former client, who ran for a 6th District congressional seat, didn't make it into the runoff. And there are people, Brian, and we'll talk about this very quickly, who think that this race between the Democrat, Christine Tribbish, and Republican Kay Kirkpatrick is a bellwether. It's going to be a harbinger of what could happen a week, 4 weeks later. What do you think?
Well, what concerns me is that the Democrat will have a strong showing. I don't think that there's much chance that the Democrat will be joining the state Senate. That's going to be Kay Kirkpatrick. She's going to be Nan's new colleague there amongst the 56 person debating society there. But I don't want to see a really strong showing by the Democrat, because I do think that in a district that has been as consistently Republican as that one that would send a really bad message going into the runoff. So, yeah, I'm concerned about it, but not concerned about a loss.
Well, I will say, our listeners may not realize this, but the Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, who consistently messes in the electoral process, I think, and misuses the power that he has, did not put that election tomorrow on the ballot on June 20th. With the Ossoff handle election, out of the fear, obviously, I'm reading the tea leaves that why on earth are our counties having to pay because of the Secretary of State? We're paying for two elections, one tomorrow and one the 20th of June.
Nan, I think I want to do a fact check here. It is my understanding that the time period that now goes by in federal elections, like congressional elections, mm-hmm. is based on a federal
requirement
that's right. that mm-hmm. Expands the runoff time mm-hmm. to allow for overseas
that's
voters.
That's exactly military, right.
But that the state law is still 3 weeks after the first election. Is that not correct?
The Secretary of State has the option to put
it. He does.
He has the option to put it with the June 20th.
Okay.
And he's not doing it for partisan reasons, and it is costing the taxpayers of these counties, Fulton and Cobb, it's costing them it's the cost of running another election.
All right.
I don't know if that's true. I would love to be able to talk to Brian Kemp and see if that's accurate. Because I think it's crazy to have two elections myself. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that it's state law, and that state law is governing what we're doing here, and that there's not a choice. We need to fix this federal runoff issue. There needs to be serious legislation filed by Nan or one of her colleagues mm-hmm. To fix this so that we can have
consistency.
Instant runoffs so that we don't have to come back in 2 months. 2 months is way too long. It costs way too much money. And people are just getting tired of it. I think a lot of this election is losing steam because people are tired of it. They've just been inundated with it, and so close to such a contentious national election. People are just sick of it. Let's have one election and be done. There's a way to do it with ranked voting.
All right.
There is we need to look at all sorts of new ideas that are in practice in other states around access to the ballot and running elections. No doubt about it. That's an interesting conversation to continue.
All right. I want to move on to other issues. But before I do, let's take a couple of the tweets that relate specifically to the 6th District race. Galen Jacobs asks, if Ossoff wins, is this a referendum on Trump or just a well-strategized run by Ossoff? Brian?
I don't think without Trump, Ossoff could have taken off the way that he has. I'm still a bit mystified at how he became the chosen one. He kind of came out of nowhere, and he's doesn't have any serious experience, and he's very, very young. And I don't know how the finger landed on him, but it did. And I do think that the national atmosphere, the fact that this is a very special district in the sense that it is one of the 10 most highly college-educated districts in the country. It is the only one of those 10 that elected a Republican last November, which is really interesting. All the other 9 are Democrat-held.
Well.
So there's obviously a correlation there that we can't deny. And there is obviously, amongst the Republican base, people who and Republican-leaning independents, a little bit of consternation about Trump in the sense that they are his weakest part of the Republican coalition. So all of those ingredients came to give us this soup that we have and is giving John Ossoff a chance.
All right. Nowhere Man says, don't forget people are turned away by voter suppression, malfunctioning voting machines, et cetera. Other factors besides whether they like or don't like a given candidate, and he's certainly correct about that. Catherine Cummings has a message for you, Brian Robinson. Get a job. How about the people paying big dollars, she has $3 signs, to get in the room? Classist to think that protesters aren't working. So that's Catherine Cummings' message to you, Brian.
Classist.
Straight to the heart. Yeah.
All right. As long as we're listening to the voices of all of you out there, we asked you all as we transition now into a conversation about this remarkable story that I'll ask both Nan and Brian in a minute to comment on it, but it strikes me it's getting bigger and bigger. It's certainly not going away. And maybe the Trump people are lucky he's leaving the country on Friday, although I can't imagine they didn't wish it was going to be today that he was heading out, because it might have changed the conversation a bit. In any case, we are continuing to deal with Trump's firing of Jim Comey, the FBI director. We asked you on Friday to call our number, our recorded line, to tell us how you're feeling about the Trump firing of Comey. And by the way, that number is 678-757-4472. We always welcome you to call us there. Let's listen to just a sampling of what you told us.
This is Wayne from Warner Robins again. He did collude with a foreign nation. Why do we not just come out and say that he did it instead of pity-pat around the mulberry tree?
Hey, Bill Nigut, this is Steve Kerr. I think it's quite ironic. Comey hands the presidency to Trump, and Trump fires him.
You know, it's been almost a year since this Russian stuff has been around, and not a single arrest has been made, not a single indictment. You know why? Because it's a hoax. Thank you.
All right, just a few of your comments. By the way, if you do call us at that line, 678-757-4472, leave us your name, as our listeners did just now, and tell us where you're calling from. That really is important to us as well. So let's pick up on a couple of those points very quickly before we get into the substance of the last few days. Brian, our final caller suggests that it's been a year now. We haven't heard much. The reality is, the Senate investigation is really just ramping up now, so it may be mistaken to think that if it hasn't come out yet, it's not coming out. Yeah?
Well, you know, here's the thing. We haven't had an investigation completed yet.
Right.
And I think that Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, was very articulate and forceful and statesmanlike in his comments yesterday on Meet the Press. We need to get to the bottom of this, that there is consensus amongst Republicans and Democrats that whether or not they impacted the outcome, and we Republicans don't believe that they did, Russia did make a concerted attempt to sway our election.
Well, why don't we listen to just some highlights? Lindsey Graham gave a long interview to Chuck Todd on Meet the Press yesterday. He's, if nothing, he is always straightforward. I frankly don't know how he keeps getting reelected in South Carolina.
Well, people,
but
you know, voters
does.
Like straightforward people.
Well, he
voters will tell you over and over that straight talker, even if I don't agree with you, you're going to talk straight.
So let's listen to Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press yesterday talking about Trump and Comey.
And I think it's time to call the FBI director before the country at large and explain what happened to that dinner. And if there are any tapes, they have to be turned over. You can't be cute about tapes. If there are any tapes of this conversation, they need to be turned over. I doubt if there are, but we need to clear there. Right now, I do not believe President Trump is a target or subject of any investigation regarding collusion with the Russians. That's what I believe. But this tweet has to be answered. I would advise the president not to tweet or comment about the investigation. As we go forward, the Russians did interfere in our election. I don't think they changed the outcome. I have no evidence of collusion, but the president needs to back off here and let the investigation go forward.
All right, Lindsey Graham on Meet the Press. Of course, he's talking about the tweet in which Donald Trump suggested Jim Comey better tell the truth because there may be tapes. Brian, it strikes me that this is an example, whether you are a supporter of his or not, where you say to yourself, oh my gosh, this guy is his own worst enemy.
Well, I think a lot of it is he doesn't know how the system works. He doesn't know that by going out there and saying there may be tapes, that that's going to raise eyebrows amongst congressional investigators and committees of jurisdiction to go, hey, well, if you got those, you got to turn them over. So he sort of it really is another example of learning on the job. And it's something that is of concern to many Republicans, certainly I among them. And look, the chaos of the White House is something that also concerns me. I am not a policy person. I am not a fundraising person. I am not a pollster. I do communications. And from that narrow lane, and I stay in that narrow lane, I have just been appalled by what I saw last week, where they sent Vice President Pence, who has been nothing but a loyal soldier to Trump, out there on national TV with the talking points. He delivered them well, and then the next day the president goes out there, pulls the rug out from under not only Pence, but also Sean Spicer and Sarah Huckabee Sanders. All of those folks were made to look like fools because he went out there and completely contradicted his own administration's line of defense.
Nan, this is in some ways, I think, you're going to have a self-evident answer to this because you are in a Democratic Senate district. You represent a Democratic district. But what are people saying to you out in your district? How are Georgians responding, do you think, to all of this?
Well, it's interesting. I was on the train at the airport and asked two different gentlemen in suits and ties, clearly on business. What did they think of Comey's firing? Now, that's not a constituent of mine necessarily. Absolutely not. But they both were appalled. I was talking to the first guy, and he said, yeah, it looks terrible. It looks terrible. It's not a good thing. The second guy called from across the other side of the MARTA car to say, well, you know why he's doing it. He's doing it to stop this Russian investigation. That's why he's doing it. And then I talked to a working class guy, not in a suit and tie, was my next person, and he agreed. It was awful. In my district, people are appalled, constituents. Now the latest news that the FBI has sent the signal, you're not welcome. It wouldn't go well if you come out to the FBI headquarters.
So, Eric,
that's astonishing.
Eric Erickson, who has been a really pretty remarkable Republican or conservative in the way he's dealt over the last 2 years with Trump. He has been a never-Trumper, but he's also said there are times when he thinks Trump is on the right track. He basically gave a defense. He points out in a column that James Comey, Brian, should have been fired maybe last July when he decided to give the news conference about Hillary Clinton without the authorization, apparently, of the Attorney General. This has been in the making for a long time. And Comey, who most people think is a man of integrity, probably overstepped his bounds and got out of his lane in a way that he should have been fired a long time ago. The question has become, why does Trump wait? And then why does he admit to Lester Holt in an NBC interview the other day that he did it because the Russia investigation was out of control? Here's another communications problem for you.
I don't think there's a person in America who can watch that interview and go, that's perfectly rational. The strategy there makes so much sense. I don't think anybody is saying that. You know, the fact is, Obama didn't fire him last year because it would have looked like he was trying to help Hillary from someone who was investigating
her. Yeah, that he was making a partisan move against the federal agency. That's right.
All right.
And I do think Comey's a man of integrity. As I tweeted last week, he is singular in American history for being a martyr and a hero of the left, and then of the right, and then of the left. Again, I mean, no one has ever been like him, where each side takes turns on hating him and loving him.
All right. I want to make sure we get in at least one soundbite from this week yesterday with George Stephanopoulos so you can hear. There were not many Republicans out or Trump people out defending him this weekend, but Nikki Haley was out there. Let's listen to her brief comment.
The president is the CEO of the country. He can hire and fire whoever he wants. That's his right. Whether you agree with it or not, it's the truth. And what he's trying to do is find his own team, figure out how he's going to do it. Were there better ways he could have done that? That's for everybody else to decide.
That's
I think everybody else is deciding.
Well,
yes.
In fact,
thank you, Nikki.
Quinnipiac has a new poll out. They've been a respected pollster for quite a long time. And his approval numbers are near a record low. He's at like 39-38%, I think, on their poll. But here's something that they did. And I want to be careful about this because Quinnipiac asked an open-ended question. I'm going to read it specifically because it's an incendiary question, and the answers are incendiary. Quinnipiac said, "What is the first word that comes to mind when you think of Donald Trump?" And they point out that the numbers they show are not percentages. They are the individual number of times that someone used the word. Brian, it's distressing, I think, not just to Republicans, but to the country, because he is president, that the word given most often is idiot. 39 people apparently, according to Quinnipiac, responded independent of one another. I know we laugh at that, but that's a very frightening thought.
The truth is that Donald Trump became president having never had good polling numbers, having never had high approval ratings. He was almost always underwater with the American public. He became president because he was able to get the nomination with a plurality of Republican voters who have felt left behind by the global economy. And then he became president in the general by running against someone who was the most toxic candidate that the Democrats have ever put forward. And that was his pathway. Despite all of those negative approval ratings, polls also have shown that if the election were today and he would win the popular vote.
Well, the last time we saw it's been a while since that poll question has been asked.
Yeah, I think that needle's moving.
But we'll see. Let me also point out, though,
Hillary hasn't helped herself either.
Businessman, strong, got a lot of not responses. People called him those things. They said he was successful, but incompetent, liar, unqualified, leader was way up there as well. I just think that this is a – look, 30 to 40 people responding that way is not enough to tell us really anything. But it is disturbing, Nan, that in a poll – people would use words like that to describe a president of the United States.
It is, and it's commonplace. I hear it every day. You said, what do people in my district think? People are apoplectic at how far has this got to go before the impeachment starts. And the truth of the matter is, this is not a question of Donald Trump still having to learn the ropes of how to be a president. This man has conducted himself lifelong as a person who believes he is above the law.
All right.
He is above the law. And our rule of law in this country is under threat right now.
Well, James Clapper suggests that, yes. A former national security advisor. Let's listen to Clapper, who was on CNN yesterday.
I think in many ways our institutions are under assault, both externally, and that's the big news here, is the Russian interference in our election system. And I think as well our institutions are under assault internally.
Internally from the president?
Exactly. The founding fathers, in their genius, created a system of three co-equal branches of government and a built-in system of checks and balances. And I feel as though that's under assault and is eroding.
Is that an overstatement, Brian?
I think Clapper has shown himself throughout this process to be very anti-Trump. So I do think that...
Well, he's the one who the president has quoted repeatedly as saying there's nothing, there's no there to the investigation.
That's right. This is one man's opinion of what's going on, how widespread it is. Yeah.
You're calling Clapper one man's opinion?
Yes.
I mean,
he's one man.
He has had an incredible professional position from which to hold opinions that merit some gravity.
I would argue that people would say the same thing about Trump. He said he's had a lot of professional experience that makes him qualified.
Going bankrupt?
I want to play another piece of sound. Excuse me. You know, normally the Saturday Night Live sketches get so much airplay by the time we're on the show Monday afternoon that we just have decided that you've heard them already. But there was a moment in the cold open the other night that I thought we ought to just spend a minute talking about, because it struck me as being so on point. This is from the open, Alec Baldwin playing President Trump. Michael Che is performing as Lester Holt. It's a tiny bit of their parody on the NBC interview between Trump and Holt. Let's listen and talk about it on the other side.
Okay, sir, but back to James Comey. Your staff has been insisting all week that you didn't fire him because of his Russian investigation.
No, I did.
Wait, what?
I fired him because of Russia. I thought he's investigating Russia. I don't like that. I should fire him.
And you're just admitting that?
Uh-huh.
But that's obstruction of justice.
Sure, okay.
Wait, so did I get him? Is this all over? Oh, no, I didn't. Nothing matters. Absolutely nothing matters anymore.
Nan, that's a profound statement. Nothing matters anymore. And it does feel as though we have moved into completely new territory in which people make reach conclusions that they want regardless of fact or fiction, and it applies to Democrats and Republicans alike. It isn't simply a matter of people who are supporters of Trump.
Well, I take issue with this. Either are the Dems or this the same as the Republicans? That what's going on here is precedent setting, never before seen. I saw a great cartoon, the Founding Fathers sitting around. What do we do in the case that a know-nothing, loudmouth who acts above the law threatens to tear apart our nation and our founding documents? And they say, well, how are we going to protect for that?
I get that you don't want to create a false equivalency, but I will tell you, and I've said this on the show before, Brian, and we got to get to a break, so I'm going to give you just a second here. I flip around in the evening from Fox to MSNBC to CNN, and I will tell you there are nights when I turn on Rachel Maddow, who is the liberal's liberal, and I just say to myself, contrary to what Nan is saying, this is just words. This is just, sometimes she's on target, and other times she's picking at things that are so insignificant, so tiny, reading them in the way she wants to, that facts just don't seem to matter anymore.
I think she's very fact-based, Bill. No. Come on. Yeah.
She unearths facts
that are not well known.
At times, I agree.
The tax return show was an utter joke. She really did so much to hurt her credibility, the way she built up
I probably shouldn't have brought it up. I apologize. I just think that Democrats at times are also guilty of exaggerating, going, looking for an interpretation that may not be there. That's really what I'm suggesting.
I spent some time with friends and relatives up in Forsyth County, Democrats and Republicans, all who respect each other, have relationships, kids spend time together, they're at the lake together. And what was unearthed is the fact that people are looking at different sources of, quote, news.
Right.
And know nothing about what's on the other side.
Right.
I'm like you. I flipped to Fox. I want to see what they're saying.
Of course.
But there were people there who never see anything but Fox, and they truly didn't know all sorts of facts that people that are on MSNBC and CNN did know.
All right.
They're real. They're real issues.
I got to get a break in. As we go to break, if this is all right with you, Tyler, a fun fact from the New York Times the other day. On the weekend after Jim Comey was fired, he took his wife and family to see a musical. They went to, I assume it was at the Kennedy Center. That's usually, they went to see a traveling production of the Broadway musical Fun Home, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize a couple of years ago.
I went to see that in New York last year.
There you go.
Is that right?
As we go to the break, maybe we should just, is it all right to do it now, Tyler? Let's listen to a little of the music from Fun Home that Comey saw the other night.
On the next Fresh Air,
I got a place. Turns out a place that needs some robbing. A little robbing, not wholesale burglary, just looking for a certain item.
The FX series Fargo is back for a third season with more murder and mishap. We talk with series creator and writer Noah Hawley. He also created the FX series Legion and has a best-selling novel. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
What I thought was funny about Jim Comey and his family going to see Fun Home, a musical, on the weekend after he was fired, is that this seems to be a Justice Department ritual. The weekend after Sally Yates was fired, she and her husband Comer went to see a musical called Troubadour right here in Atlanta. Apparently, this is what you do if you're fired from the Department of Justice.
Bill, your background in the arts is showing.
There must be a good severance package.
All right, we don't have a whole lot of time.
And speaking of R's and D's, Sally Yates.
Yeah.
There you go, balance.
We're going to do a little bit longer show about Sally Yates and her future. She's been getting so much attention, and you're welcome to come back. We'll have you on
Lovely.
That show. Couple of quick things. We're going to do one thing fairly quickly. Callista Gingrich apparently is going to be the next ambassador to the Vatican. Everybody thought it would be her husband, Newt, who would end up with an appointment. It looks like it's going to be her. And there have been some pretty negative tweets out there
yes.
about her getting that job. It's an interesting choice.
Well, the negative tweets. I want to get to this point in the last segment. One of the problems that the left has, they have a lot of rich targets out there, but they are just looking so unhinged just across the board. Like last week when Betsy DeVos was booed while giving a graduation speech, it's just uncalled for. They look like jerks. And that's kind of what I was going at earlier in the hour when I discussed the protesters at the Paul Ryan thing.
Axios, it's
just too much.
Axios says that... they have a source. The news organization Axios says their source. They tweeted says that Trump was reluctant to send Callista to the Vatican because he likes seeing her husband Newt defending him on TV.
Yeah.
The source told the president they were sure satellite hookups could be arranged for Newt at the Holy See.
It is shameful It is shameful. We in Georgia well know Newt Gingrich's history with women, you know, the multiple divorces, the cheating on his wife, trying to impeach Bill Clinton while he's got his staffer cohabiting in the office.
All right,
call it. Also, no, people know that Vanity Fair had a huge article with eyewitnesses to things happening in, with Newt and young women. And it is scandalous.
All right,
I think it's a great appointment.
Lisa Clark, producer Lisa Clark, says, put your oven mitts on if you're going to go look at the Twitter reaction to Calista.
Oh,
because many
some.
Of the comments cannot be read aloud in
exactly.
Polite company.
So, my experience.
All right, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Nan.
No.
But we are running out of time. And I do think, and we'll have to take this up in more detail in a later show. Brian, it's interesting that Jeff Sessions now says that he's going to get tough on drug offenders again. The Obama administration said mandatory minimum sentencing is disproportionately unfair to African-American drug offenders. They decided they had to back off, and Sessions says, nope, he's instructed his U.S. attorneys to push hard. And that's contrary to what your former boss, the governor of Georgia, has wanted to do. He, too, believes that disproportionate sentencing has to be gotten rid of, and he believes that it's better to be a little bit more, have flexibility in sentencing drug offenders.
Governor Deal believes that we can get better outcomes in our criminal justice system while spending less money. It is a fiscal conservative dream what we have pulled off here in Georgia. When he came into office, we had 56,000 people in our prison system. Today, it's 52, and the crime rate has gone down. We've saved money. We've got less crime. We've got more people going back to work as opposed to having this scar on their resume that keeps them from ever being employed and supporting their families. And we have 4,000 to 5,000 Georgians in accountability courts who would otherwise be in prison. They are getting healthy. They're getting drug treatment, mental health treatment. We are the model for the nation. And look, on the federal level, you can just build more prisons and tack it onto the debt, and nobody cares. Fiscal conservatives should be demanding that the Trump administration look at what we've done in Georgia, because it is conservative governance at work.
Nan, there are people who fear that the next step is Sessions is going to interfere with medical marijuana laws in states,
sure,
as well as recreational marijuana.
Well, let me add to the points that Brian just made, because I serve in the legislature that passed those bills, and there's been a strong bipartisan effort that has been the success story for Georgia's reform of our criminal justice system. That's when I think you get the strong results, is when people come together for solutions. And it is fiscally conservative, it is efficient, but it's changing people's lives. You know, we've lowered the incarceration rate for African-American men by a measurable amount. We've lowered the overall numbers, lowered the black women's incarceration rate by 37%. We've got judges all across the state in all but two judicial circuits that are working on building these accountability courts.
Governor Deal has had bipartisan support for his work on criminal justice.
Absolutely.
It's one of the most powerful programs many people would say that he's able to deal with. Yes?
I would say so. And again, I point to strong leadership from Democrats and Republicans supporting the governor in these efforts. He also reformed the juvenile justice system.
I got to cut you off because we have run through this show and are out of time. We got so much more to talk about, which is why I'm glad we're back here Wednesday at 2 o'clock. Both of you, I want you back as soon as possible, because we haven't even started with all the things we can talk about. Brian Robinson, Republican strategist, Senator Nan Orrick, Democratic senator in the state legislature. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you to Jenny Ament, Tyler Morris, and Lisa Clark. We'll be back at 2 o'clock on Wednesday with a lot more. See you then.